The views and opinions expressed on the following program are those of the guests and not necessarily those of KICI Radio or Extend the Dream Foundation.
Hello and welcome to the Situation Room. In this program, KICI takes a look at issues affecting our community: local government, health, the environment, economics, services, nonprofits and organizations, and more. Segments are broadcast throughout the week and also on our SoundCloud site and Facebook page. We welcome again today Nicholas Johnson, back for another talk about current events, thoughts on government, society, civics, and more current events, how they impact all of us in various ways. By way of introduction, Nicholas Johnson is retired from teaching law at the University of Iowa. He's an Iowa City native and has worked on both coasts and as part of a Washington, D.C. law firm. While in D.C., he held three presidential appointments, notably Federal Communications Commissioner during the Lyndon B. Johnson administration, also clerked for Supreme Court Justice Hugo Black, and served as U.S. Maritime Administrator and co-director of the Public Health Institute. And he was an advisor to a White House conference during the Carter administration. Now back in Iowa City and retired from teaching law, he has served on the Iowa City School Board and continues to write on many subjects. You can find many of his writings on the blog fromdctoiowa.blogspot.com. That's number two, fromdctoiowa.blogspot.com, and nicholasjohnson.org. Nicholas Johnson, thank you for joining us again today.
Well, thank you for inviting me, Holly.
So you mentioned three of your recent articles that have appeared on your blog or in the Gazette. You listed these as being titled, "Which Side Are You On?", "U.S. House Needs More Bipartisanship," and "Civics Can Save Us." Perhaps the role of the individual in public life, bipartisanship, and the role of civics. So we can start perhaps with the current news. Most recently, I think, the outcome of the Georgia Senate election, the outcome of the midterms in general nationally, and the Democratic National Committee, or certain members of that committee, removing Iowa as one of the first caucus states, or the first caucus state. What should Iowa Democrats do going forward about building a statewide party?
Well, you're right, Holly. I think there's been a lot of politics recently, and I think these other topics you mentioned, the threat of an authoritarian dictatorship and the role of education and civics in maintaining a democracy, and then the bipartisanship that we need in the U.S. House. And I've got a proposal for that that is designed to help both Democrats and Republicans. So getting them to read it and believe it is something else, of course. And this has been an interesting time for Iowa. A journalist in Washington, D.C., sent me a little note. He said, "Are there any Democrats left in Iowa anymore?" The results around the country were much more favorable to the Democrats than anybody had been predicting. But the results in Iowa were pretty unacceptable to Democrats who care. So one of the issues we have right now in Iowa is what are the Democrats going to do, if anything, about building a political party here that can actually win some elections? There was only one person amongst the state office holders and the federal U.S. Senate and the congressional district, so forth. There's only one person who was a Democrat who actually won. And what it seems to me we ought to do is similar to what I once advised a hospital that will remain nameless, that was concerned about relationships between patients and the staff and doctors. And they were going to send a whole bunch of people down to Disneyland, where they have a program on customer relations. And I suggested instead that what they do is get somebody who's pretty bright and curious and can take notes and send them up to Rochester, Minnesota, in the Mayo Clinic, and have them spend a couple of weeks there and take notes on what they do, and then have them come back to their hospital and just do what Mayo's doing. Well, I think we need to send a delegation to Georgia on this occasion and find out what they're doing in Georgia, which is much more reminiscent of the Democratic Party of the 20th century than what the Democratic Party looks like now. That has not been easy for them down there, and they got organized, they got a lot of people involved. a lot of person-to-person contact. So anyway, that's that. Now, you mentioned that the role of individuals in all this political process, and I did write of these three columns you mentioned. One headlined, "Which Side Are You On?" was based on the labor union song, because as the railroad unions have discovered recently, you really got to have everybody lined up. It's similar in a way to what you would need with any sort of team action. You couldn't have a football team, 11 people on the side, and 2 to 5 of them are trying to fix the game and have it go to the opponents. You got to have everybody trying. That doesn't mean that your team's going to win, as we've discovered, those who are Hawkeye fans, but it does mean at least you're all trying to go in the same direction. The reason for the "Which Side Are You On?" is that we are now in a position where we need to make a choice. Either we're going to rebuild our democracy and overturn a lot of the efforts to do it harm, or we're going to just continue this slide on down to a time when we have an authoritarian dictator and what we've thought of as democracy during the 20th century just no longer exists. And every individual American needs to decide which side are they on, because the energy is behind going to the authoritarian dictatorship. And those who stay out of this and don't get involved, they are in effect voting for the authoritarian dictatorship. What we need is for everybody to come together on this. The current issue in the House of Representatives with regard to divisiveness is the selection of a speaker. And there are those within the Republican Party, now that they control the House, they've got the majority, they get to select the speaker, that there are Republicans who would like to use this opportunity as one in which they can really batter the Democrats and investigate everything conceivably capable of being investigated and stay away from policy of any kind, and just conduct themselves in a way that they can get reelected. 90% of them who want to be reelected are reelected, but they certainly don't behave as if they're confident of that result for themselves.
Do you think they should be confident of being reelected? Because you mentioned a couple of things. You're talking about the role of the individual, which side are you on? But then the need for bipartisanship, and then how that might work out in, I guess, public life for individuals. I wanted to get back eventually to, you talked about bipartisanship and that you had a bill or a proposal. It would be good to hear what that proposal is, where it would go into effect. Is that something to be instituted on a civic level, a statewide level, or is this something that could go into the congressional level?
Well, I'm proposing it for the House of Representatives. What I'm proposing is designed to help the Republican Party as much as the Democratic Party. We've got to have a functioning government, though there are a number of members of the House and Senate who don't believe that. But Republicans need to rebuild their party. The Trump-endorsed candidates did not do all that well, and there's some evidence of the polling that voters really don't like the two parties just attacking each other and then serving the interests of the most wealthy and the corporations and not doing anything for the ordinary folks. If the Republican Party, we need a Republican Party. I remember Mike Huckabee, who's the Arkansas governor and was running for president, and he was explaining how when he's going to get on a plane, he inspects the plane, and that he looks at both wings. He said, the left wing and the right wing. He said, I'd like for both of them to be in good shape. Well, I always enjoyed that line, and I would like for both of them to be in good shape, too. And I think to have members of a Republican Party who are genuinely interested in public policy and They see it from a little different viewpoint than the Democrats, but they understand that they're part of a government and a part of their responsibility is to govern, and a part of that is to compromise and move the ball on down the field for all Americans. That's what the Republicans need. Democrats want Republicans they can work with. The voters are disgusted, asking both parties to start helping working people. So here's the proposal. If the Republicans have the majority, the speaker will be a Republican. But it does not follow that it makes sense to have a vote in which all the Republican members vote for the Republican speaker and all the Democrats vote for some Democrat who obviously is not going to be elected. But it doesn't serve the interest of either party to have to compromise with the extreme wing of their own party. And that's what the Republicans are up against. And so what I'm proposing is we see if we can have a joint group made up of Republicans and Democrats, and there are groups like that within the House, as much as that may surprise people, and get a group of Democrats and Republicans together who are interested in actually governing and writing legislation and such, and see if they can agree on a Republican who they would agree to support as Speaker. And so if you got the support of the Democrats who were willing, and you got the support of the Republicans who weren't a part of the MAGA effort to agree on, they could elect anybody. And they would have to agree ahead of time that they would elect a Republican, because you can't change that. But at least it could be a Republican who is committed to actually having legislation and so forth. And the speaker would keep the power to appoint to the committees and all that kind of stuff. So we're not detracting from the Republican speaker's powers. But what we're giving him, the support that will enable the actual consideration of legislation. That's the proposal.
Any chance of that getting through Congress? Any chance do you think of that being adopted?
Probably not, just because people are so stuck in their ways about it and they're so hostile one to the other. But it's one of those cases where it's a win-win. The Democrats win, the Republicans win, in ways that both of them need to win in order to continue to win election. So anyhow, that's that idea. I don't know that it's worth that much time, but that's what it took me to deliver it.
Well, I suspect that a lot of people would find that interesting and worthwhile, especially people in Congress. That leads me to go back to the Democratic Party, because you were talking about the DNC, Democratic National Committee, and President Biden removing Iowa as the first caucus state and one of the first states to have their presidential primary or caucus. I know another recent commentator felt that this was quite possibly an act of revenge, because it's noted that in the last few caucuses, of course, Obama did well, but the eventual front runners that the DNC favored, Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden, did not do all that well in the Iowa caucuses. Hillary Clinton came out near the top, but Bernie Sanders was, let's say, a virtual tie. And then the most recent one, we had Bernie Sanders and Pete Buttigieg instead of Joe Biden. On the other hand, Joe Biden did very well in South Carolina. What do you think of the idea that this may simply be a way for a more centralized oversight of the Democratic Party selection process?
Well, I am not a fan of Democratic National Committee, even though I served for them on a project involving TV commercials. But they somehow have the idea that flyover country can be forgotten country. And they literally go from coast to coast by air. And they seem to have the idea that they can be a national political party in a country where 80% of the counties are majority Republican. That's just crazy. I mean, sure, you get more support in urban areas, but you can't just turn your back on 80% of the 3,500 counties. It's just crazy. And they were not providing a lot of help to Democrats in Iowa this last midterms. So I think that they've really gotten themselves into this. I mean, Franklin Roosevelt handed the Democratic Party coalition. Minnesota Democrats called themselves the Democratic Farmer Labor Party. And that's the kind of coalition that Roosevelt built. And if the party had stuck with that and still tried to serve the needs of workers and support unions and go door to door and actually talk to people you want to have vote for your candidate, not just at election time, but more like the Tammany Hall folk did in New York City or Mayor Daley did in Chicago, where people know that the party has helped them. Helped them get a job, helped them get food, helped them get housing, whatever. And so when it comes time to vote, they pay back with their vote. Well, when you turn your back on those folks and you're primarily engaged in the business of fundraising, I wrote a column about that, that elected officials are not public officials, they're fundraisers. They have to spend a half of their time raising millions of dollars. Anyhow, I think that that's what the Democratic Party needs to do, and I think the DNC is off on the wrong track and is being perceived quite accurately by the electorate in those 80% of the counties. In Iowa, it's even more. It's over 90% of the counties. The counties that vote a Democratic are the counties that have universities. Story County with Iowa State and Johnson County with the University of Iowa and Blackhawk County with the University of Northern Iowa. And then Polk County where Des Moines is. And then sometimes there can be a couple other. But that's it. And you look at all the 99 counties in Iowa and they're nearly all red. It's over 90%. Well, you just can't have a statewide Democratic Party with 90% of the counties being majority Republican. Something has to be done about that. And for the DNC to turn their back on Iowa is not the swiftest move if they really want to see better results in the future.
Well, getting back to the majority Republican sweep of Iowa, especially the rural areas, what advice would you have for the Republican Party? Obviously, these are now the representatives of these counties, but as you've noted, there is also quite a range of view and perhaps a growing surfacing of different views in the Republican Party. Do you see any development in that direction?
Well, yes, a needed development, yes. Whether it'll be a development or not remains to be seen, but it's related to what we were talking about with regard to a essentially a bipartisan selection of a speaker who would be a Republican. A lot of people are really fed up with Republicans are fed up with the MAGA crowd and the big lie and the attack on the Capitol and Trump's behavior and comments most recently that he thought there were big chunks of the Constitution that could simply be done away with.
What do you think Iowa Republicans ought to do about that then? How do you think the Iowa Republican Party could position itself?
I think the Iowa Republican Party is obviously in pretty good shape. I mean, look at the results. Democrats lost seats in the House and the Senate. They lost every state office except for one. They lost all federal offices. So I the Republicans are doing just fine. If all you care about is winning elections, if you're interested in building a party for the future, I think what the Republican Party would be well advised to do would be to give a little more attention to the kind of moderate folks in their party, the kind of Republican Party we had back in the 50s and 60s, 70s. That would build a solid base for the party. They would pick up votes of independents who didn't like Democrats and some third party, the Libertarian people, and so there are voters out there who they could get by being reasonable and actually being governors instead of just fundraisers and people whose most important goal in life is to be reelected.
We're coming to the end of our time. We have just a couple minutes left. To move on from this, you had talked also about what I would call civics education. And again, going back to the role of the individual, what can an individual do right now? What you talk about civics education as the foundation of a democracy. What role do individuals have to play as things continue to work out on the public sphere?
Well, we used to teach civics. Our founders believed that this is a fundamental of a democracy. As the National Council for the Social Studies says in a report, quote, as Thomas Jefferson, Horace Mann, John Dewey, and other great educators understood, public schools do not serve a public so much as create a public. The goal of schooling is to equip a citizenry with the knowledge, skills, and dispositions needed for active and engaged civil life. The important thing to note there is the word skills. Because teaching civics has to be more than students reading and discussing in class and lectures and taking exams. We're talking about a skill, just as if a community college had a course in how to drive a semi-truck, but they never put the student in the cab to drive the truck.
What kind of skills are you thinking of?
Well, identifying an issue, and it could be in the school, something they want to have in the cafeteria luncheon offering every day, or they want to have taken out of the luncheon offering. Or it could be an area of town that needs another street light. So you identify an issue where the powers that be are not inclined to do anything about it. And so you do that, and then you're in the business of trying to build a public support for your proposal. And then you have the possibilities of, say, having a march or bringing a mass of people to a school board meeting or city council meeting, and to see what kind of responsiveness there can be for just ordinary folk banding together, trying to get something accomplished. And it's not something you win every time, of course not. But it is the only way that there's ever been of the ordinary folk and poorer folks and whatever getting anything out of government. They have to get organized and know how to go about doing that and then presenting their case. Those are some of the skills that are involved that accompany what they're learning in a conventional sense. But right now, in terms of education, we've still not added an additional 2 years of free education. We went to high schools over 100 years ago. We still aren't funding all the community colleges. There are all too many students who are ignorant of American history, the provisions of our Constitution, the MAGA politicians and parents attack the K-12 teachers who ultimately leave their jobs. College tuition soars. I mean, we're not doing what we need to do. De Tocqueville reported in the early 1800s that in New England, quote, every citizen receives the history of the country and the leading features of the Constitution. Politics are the end and aim of education. And that was what our founders believed. That's what de Tocqueville picked up on. And that's what was still applicable in the early 20th century. But we've drifted away from that. And not only have we drifted away as we concentrate on so-called STEM courses, but we've got a body of folks now who are actually overtly opposed to teaching this stuff.
We're running out of time here. That sounds like a good topic for another talk from you. We could go more into education and the traditions of education and what's being changed and what needs to be readopted. We are talking with Nicholas Johnson, retired from teaching law at the University of Iowa. He held three presidential appointments, most notably as Federal Communications Commissioner in the Lyndon B. Johnson administration, also served as U.S. Maritime Administrator and co-director of the Public Health Institute. Also mentioned, you can read many of his articles in the Gazette and find them online at fromdctoiowa.blogspot.com. That's a number two, fromdctoiowa.blogspot.com and nicholasjohnson.org. Nicholas Johnson, any final words that you want to leave listeners with?
Well, I trust we've left listeners with the realization that they've got a lot of responsibilities if we're going to hang on to our democracy.
Thank you, Nicholas Johnson. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Holly.
You've been listening to The Situation Room. These segments are broadcast throughout the week, and we also upload them to our SoundCloud site and post the links and links to more resources on our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/ICLocalRadio. Or in the Facebook search bar, enter KICI Iowa City Local Radio. If you have suggestions, questions, or information, email us at info@kiciradio.org. I'm Holly Hart for KICILP 105.3 FM, Iowa City.